book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, begins with an appeal to Bhavukaha, to all those thoughtful and experienced men. Please try to relish this Srimad Bhagavatam. Rasika Bhavi Bhavukaha. So this book is meant for the Rasika Bhaktas. And therefore it is called the Paramahamsa Samhita. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranamamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is not an ordinary Purana. It is a spotless Purana, Amala Purana. And because it contains the spotless descriptions of the spotless personality of Godhead Krishna, it is very dear to the Vaishnavas. Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Yasmin Paramahamsa Ekam. In this scripture, which includes subjects that are meant for the Paramahamsas, Amalam Param Jnanam Giyate. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam is sung Param Jnana, the topmost knowledge, which is meant for those who are Paramahamsas. Therefore it is Paramahamsa Samhita. Param Jnanam Giyate. So therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam is a song. It is a transcendental song in which the highest transcendental knowledge has been sung very melodiously. It is not meant for those who are not in this category. Well, we may think that I am not a Paramahamsa, I am not a Rasika Bhakta, therefore am I then qualified to hear what to speak of speak Srimad Bhagavatam? The answer is that if we are sincerely following in the footsteps of the great acharyas in the bona fide disciplic succession, and we are being sincere in following those practices, then yes, we are qualified to hear. This, however, should be our aspiration. If we are aspiring sincerely and properly to be like the Paramahamsas, then we are also qualified to faithfully hear this Paramahamsa Samhita. All those who are not in either of these two categories, Paramahamsas, Rasika Bhaktas, or those aspiring to be Rasika Bhaktas under the training of the bona fide disciplic succession, are called non-devotees. The non-devotees may be of different categories. One are those who are called the Karmis. Karmis are those who basically believe that the goal of life is sense enjoyment. So for those who are gross sense enjoyers, for them, when they read passages of this sort, or they hear about pastimes of Krishna's Rasa Leela and so on, they give a very sensuous kind of interpretation to Krishna consciousness, to the path of bhakti, and indeed to the whole Vedic culture. And often they justify or rationalize their own promiscuity by citing such examples from the scripture. We may have another category of karmis who one may call the mundane moralists, who are shocked by such descriptions. And then you have the jnanis and the yogis and the vairagis, who may be in the second category, who also cannot relate to such descriptions of God. Therefore, they may mock such descriptions, ridicule them, or dismiss them. They may actually rebuke or chastise those who may be following this properly as being sentimentalists. We see this in the pastimes of the great Acharya Madhavendra Puri. We won't go into the details of that pastime today. But one of his disciples, Ramachandra Puri, who was latently a jnani, not actually a Rasika Bhakta, began to condemn his own guru, who was in the highest platform of Rasika Bhakti. And he was in stage of separation from Krishna, which is actually what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught as the highest realm of bhakti. But Ramachandra Puri understood this to be ordinary lamentation, and therefore he began to criticize his own guru. And his guru therefore actually condemned him and cursed him. So such jnanis, mayavadis, yogis, etc. also cannot understand this. And then there are those who are called the sahajiyas. Sahajiyas means one who take everything very cheaply. They think it's something very ordinary, and they try to imitate such pastimes of the Lord, and therefore indulge in various kinds of immoral behavior. But Srimad Bhagavatam is not meant for any of these categories. For those who are unacquainted with the mysterious ways of pure devotional service as practiced and perfected by the Rasika Bhaktas, these subjects will always remain a source of great bewilderment. They will never be able to understand these things. And their responses to such subjects will range from a variety of emotions like ridicule, shock, imitation, titillation, and so many other emotions may arise in their minds. And what makes it even more difficult is that Krishna is not an easy personality to understand. Krishna is a very difficult God to know. Generally, the conception of God is of one who is very powerful, he is almighty, all-pervasive, and perhaps, yes, all-merciful also, yes, but in an impersonal kind of way. But here, when we deal with Krishna and his pastimes, we are confronted with a person, first and foremost. A God who is a transcendental person. Not some vague, abstract, impersonal light, but an actual, supreme, transcendental personality. And this personality performs a variety of activities. Till the 10th canto begins, it may be possible for people, even who accept God as something great, to relate to the subject. But when we enter into the 10th canto, then here are manifestations of that Godhood that are very puzzling. Because Krishna and his activities, they defy and confound the general conceptions that people have of Godhood. Generally, people do not think of God as a child, because a child is a helpless living being. People in general do not understand God as being one who steals, one who cries, one who throws tantrums. And as he grows up, certainly the general conception of God is not that one will frolic and play, one will commit mischief, one will steal another person's tiffin, one will graze the cows. These are things that don't fit into the conceptions of Godhood of most people in this world. And you go further beyond, and then you have his pastimes with the gopis, which are in the mood of lover and beloved, and that is even more bewildering. And people just cannot comprehend how God can be something like this. And even if he does it, if he at least marries one wife, at least then they can maybe come to terms with it. But when he marries 16,108 queens in Dwarka, that's a bit too much. And then you go another step further in Vrindavan, where he dances with not 16,100, but many, many more gopis who are not even his legally wedded wives. Then it reaches the pinnacle of bewilderment. So Krishna is not an easy God to understand. And therefore this knowledge of Krishna, especially in chapters like this, are considered the pinnacle of knowledge, the highest perfection of knowledge. The acharyas have explained that there are five categories of knowledge in this world. One is the ordinary mundane knowledge of this world, our electronics and accountancy and physics and chemistry and so on and so forth. That is called jada jnana. Jada means that which is not sentient, that which is not conscious, material. So knowledge of this material world is called jada jnana. It has in and of itself no spiritual value. And it is from that perspective meaningless. For example, if somebody comes from the dark, pitch dark, and he tells us, I have seen the dark, I have seen darkness. Does it mean anything? You have seen darkness, what does it mean? You have seen nothing. Yes, you have seen darkness, but actually you have seen nothing. So material knowledge or jada jnana is like that. From a spiritual point of view, it means nothing. Then second is atma jnana, where we know the difference between the soul and the body. I am not the body, I am the spirit soul. Matter, material forms are temporary, but spiritual things are eternal. This is the beginning of spiritual knowledge. The third category of knowledge is practiced by a certain kind of transcendentalist who is called the Jnani. And this category of knowledge is called Nirbheda Brahma Jnana, wherein that particular transcendentalist does not make a distinction between the individual spiritual entity and the absolute ultimate spiritual entity. There is no bheda, there is no difference. Nirbheda Brahma Jnana. So such people will consider themselves to be supreme. So they will speak of phrases like soham, tattvam, asi, and so on. The fourth category of knowledge is called Ishvara Aishvarya Jnana. That knowledge by which we are able to understand, at least to some degree, the Aishvarya or the opulences, the might, the glories of Ishwar or the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. So this is called Aishvarya Jnana, which is generally what falls in the conception of godhood of people in this world. God is very great, God is almighty, God is the source of all the creation, and so on and so forth. So therefore, even in the path of devotional service, we accept this as bona fide understanding of the Lord. Because the Lord is accepted as a supreme transcendental personality, and His glories are infinite. For example, Brahma in the 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam says to Krishna in his prayers, Jananta eva janantu kim bahuktena me prabho vapaso vacho kaya vapusho vacho vaibhavam tava gochara. He says, my dear Krishna, there are some people who say that I know Krishna. So Brahma says, let them say what they want to say. Let them say they know you, but as far as I am concerned, from even the limits of my mind, my words and my actions, I cannot even approach the beginning of your glories. Vaibhavam tava gochara. I cannot even approach them. So you are so glorious, you are so mighty. So this is Aishwarya Jnana. Of course, Brahma is saying this for another reason. That earlier he had this Aishwarya Jnana, but now he has been exposed to the highest type of jnana, the fifth category. And that is why he spoke out this. That formerly I thought of you only as the all great personality, but now I know there's another aspect to your personality which I never knew about. And that is called Madhurya Jnana. Madhurya Jnana means knowledge of Krishna's unlimited, inconceivable sweetness. And one who understands this knowledge is actually the most knowledgeable person. So this is Param Jnanam, the highest knowledge. There are highest knowledge, there are categories within this highest knowledge as well, depending on how sweet and how intimate that understanding of Krishna is. So therefore the scriptures talk about the five different mellows in which one can relate to or love Krishna. There is a Shantaras, there is a Dasyaras, there is a Sakhyaras, the Vatsalyaras, the Madhuryaras. So these are the different mellows in which progressively one can develop more and more sweet and intimate understandings of Krishna. So the pinnacle of this intimate and sweet understanding is represented by the gopis of Vrindavan. And amongst all the gopis, as we all know, Srimati Radharani is the topmost gopi. Therefore, her understanding of Krishna is actually the topmost knowledge ever possible for anybody. Actually, it is not possible for anybody except Srimati Radharani. So the verses we are seeing in this chapter, especially the ones that we are reading now, these particular 10 verses, which are the actual song of the bee, these have actually been spoken by Srimati Radharani. And therefore this is param 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 jnanam. Because it is Srimati Radharani herself who actually speaks these verses. In the gradation or the development of love of Godhead, starting from the very beginning of one's conditional life here in this material world, there are different stages as Srila Rupa Goswami has outlined. Adau Shraddha, it begins with a little faith, a little appreciation for Krishna consciousness, for devotees and so on. As a result of that faith, one becomes eligible to associate with devotees and one is brought into contact with the association of devotees, and this is called Sadhu Sangha. In the association of devotees, one is engaged in various types of devotional activities, practices, which is called sadhana. We are in the stage of practice. We haven't reached perfection. We are neophytes, beginners. And as we practice devotional service, that is called bhajana kriya. As bhajana kriya progresses, progressively the unwanted sinful desires in the heart start getting destroyed. So this is called anartha nivritti, nivaran or destruction of the anarthas, the unwanted things in the heart. As the anartha nivritti reaches its stage of completion or almost there, then one comes to the stage which is called nishtha, where one becomes very determined to serve Krishna. One's determination is unshakable. One will not be deviated now by various kinds of non-devotional influences and propaganda in general. As one's nishtha or determination grows, then one develops more taste for Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and so on. This is called ruchi. As this taste intensifies, one becomes more and more attached to Krishna. This is called asakti. So up to here, we have the stage of the sadhaka. One who is practicing devotional service, who hasn't reached perfection yet. And after the stage of asakti, one comes to that marginal platform between the stage of the practitioner and the stage of the perfected devotee. And this stage is called bhava, bhava bhakti. It is neither sadhana bhakti nor is it sadhya bhakti. Sadhya bhakti is the perfection of that bhava bhakti, which is called prema bhakti. So in the stage of prema bhakti, one's love for Krishna has attained its perfection. It is completely pure now. And in the stage of prema bhakti also, it is not that everything ends there. unlimitedly one grows through different stages as outlined by the acharyas. And moving on through the different stages like sneha, mana, etc., raga, one comes to bhava and then mahabhava, which is the highest stage of that prema. That highest stage of prema is only found in Srimati Radharani and nobody else. So what we see here now are manifestations of that highest stage of Krishna prema ever possible in existence. But it is not possible for others apart from Srimati Radharani. The most excellent part of that Mahabhava is called Mohana, which is bewilderment. In the highest stage of knowledge, there is a certain kind of bewilderment. But that bewilderment is different from the bewilderment that is caused by mundane ignorance. So in that state of Mohana or bewilderment, different stages or different phases of consciousness exist. And according to those, there are 10 different types of divine madness called Divyonmad that manifest. Divya means transcendental, Unmad means madness, but this is transcendental madness, Divyonmad. And corresponding to these 10 different types of Divyonmad, there are 10 different types of apparently nonsensical talk. That is called Chitra Jalpa. We have heard of Prajalpa. Generally, when we use the word Prajalpa amongst devotees, we use it in the sense of talking mundane things. But that is a very general term. But there are specific connotations to these terms as well. So Chitra means variegated or wonderful. Jalpa means different types of talks. So corresponding to each of these 10 different types of Divya Unmada, there are these 10 different types of Chitra Jalpa. And we have these 10 verses starting from verse 12 to verse 21 of this chapter, chapter 47. And in each of these 10 verses, these different types of Chitra Jalpa have been mentioned. And that is what each of these verses is all about. So this particular verse is called that particular Chitra Jalpa, which is called Sanjalpa. So these 10 different types of Chitra Jalpa constitute the song of the bee, the Bhramara Gita. So the Srimad Bhagavatam itself is a Gita or a song. And this Bhramara Gita is one of those beautiful songs that are found in this great book. Actually, in this great song, Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many other songs as well. For example, in the fourth canto, chapter 24, we find Rudra Gita, which is the song sung by Lord Shiva. He teaches the intricacies of devotional prayer and devotional truths to the Prachetas, the 10 sons of King Prachina Barhishat. Then as we go on, there are other songs too. In the 11th canto, for example, we will find there are some songs which are Vairagya Pradhan, which means in which there is renunciation as a primary theme. We may find the Bhikshu Gita, or the song of the Avanti Brahman. We may find the Aila Gita, the song of King of Pururava. In the 12th canto, we may find the Bhumi Gita, the song of Mother Earth as she sees the people on her, sustaining on her, and she sees their condition, and then she speaks out. The 11th canto, the Bhikshu Gita, the Pingala Gita, also spoken by Pingala. The Pingala Gita, the Bhikshu Gita, Aila Gita, these are part of the larger Gita called the Uddhava Gita. So many Gitas in the Sanskrit Vedic literature. In one of the purports in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains that In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was not able to complete everything he wanted to say because he had limited time. Obviously, there was a battle about to take place. He had a very short time, so he spoke essential things. He spoke in summary. But then what he could not speak in the Bhagavad Gita, and which he had wanted to speak, he spoke finally as his last message before he departed from this world. And that was to Uddhava. And that song is called the Uddhava song. For some reason, it is a Bhagavad Gita that has become more famous than the Uddhava Gita. The Uddhava Gita is actually a more elaborate, detailed version of the Bhagavad Gita. And in the Uddhava Gita, we will find unequivocal, unambiguous emphasis on bhakti as the ultimate goal. For those who have the eyes and the ears and the proper understanding, this is so even with the Bhagavad Gita. But somehow, because there is so much description of other branches of transcendence, karma, jnana, yoga, so on and so forth, so there is some scope for others to misinterpret and bring about non-devotional conclusions. But in the Uddhava Gita, there is very little scope for that. And Krishna talks extensively about bhakti, about deity worship, and so many other topics. So the Uddhava Gita includes these other subsidiary Gitas also, where topics of renunciation from this material world will be spoken about. Even in the Mahabharata, there is another Gita called the Anugita, which comes at a later stage after the Bhishma Parva. The Bhagavad Gita appears in the Bhishma Parva. And then there is the Anugita, which is a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. That appears later on. In devotional literature, there are so many other Gitas like this. The Gita Govinda of Jayadev Goswami is very famous. And those who are devotees of Lord Jagannath in particular, they are very, very fond of Gita Govinda. It is a very exalted text containing esoteric truths, great mysteries that can never be unraveled by those who are not following in devotional disciplic successions. In fact, even Lord Jagannath likes Gita Govinda so much that a cloth on which the Gita Govinda is woven is wrapped around his body at night. He likes to hear the Gita Govinda every day. And the connection between Gita Govinda and Lord Jagannath is very deep. It is subject for another day's discussions. Even the Ramayana is such a beautiful song. It's a Gita. When the great sage Valmiki composed the Ramayana, he was thinking to himself, this composition has 24,000 verses. Who is the right candidate? Who can, first of all, memorize it? It's not easy to memorize 24,000 verses in the right sequence. But also, who is it who can sing it very melodiously and beautifully and go everywhere and spread the message of Lord Ram? And right at that time, the two sons of Ram, Lav and Kush, happened to come before him. And he understood that these were the two right candidates for the job. So he taught them the Ramayana. And then Lav and Kush memorized it and sung it very beautifully as they wandered all over. And eventually they also came to Ayodhya, and Lord Ram himself heard this beautiful song. So all these different types of songs in the Vedic literature are basically very beautiful songs. So there are two types of songs. One are the mundane songs, which we have nothing to do with, which is actually a misuse of the great science of music. And then there are the transcendental songs, which are very meaningful in every sense of the term. They are, and they have been set to different notes of music, and they are sung, and they have been sung in the community of devotees from time immemorial. So variety of songs exists in the Sanskrit literature, in the Srimad Bhagavatam too, and particularly in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have what is called the Gita Panchakam, the five beautiful songs that pertain to the Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna. There are also other songs that pertain to the Dwarka pastimes, like there is the Mahishi Geet later on in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But in the Vrajalila section of the Bhagavatam, there is a Gita Panchakam, these five chapters, the five songs. First is the Venu Gita, which is the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. Krishna goes out with his friends, cowherd boy friends, with his cows, and he's grazing them, and he reaches Vanshivat and he plays his flute. The song of the flute is mesmerizing. Everybody hears it, but the effect it has on the gopis is unparalleled, unique. And then, in that state of being mesmerized by the sound of Krishna's flute, not the mobile phone, the gopis sing this song, the Venu Geet, in the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. The most exalted section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, again, that which is understood only by very exalted devotees, is called the Rasa Panchadhyaya, the five chapters which contain or which lead up to and include the Rasa Leela. The chapters 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. So the first of them, 29th, in which Krishna and the gopis meet together before the Rasa Leela, and the gopis sing again, that is called the Pranaya Geeta. So after the Gopi Geet comes the Pranaya Geet. Then they meet and they get a little proud. Krishna leaves them in order to make them a little humble, and the gopis become grief-stricken. They wander here and there looking for Krishna, and in their state of separation and grief, they sing a song which is called the famous, the celebrated Gopi Geet in the 31st chapter, also part of the Rasa Panchadhyaya. So that's the third of the Gita Panchaka. Now this is over, the Rasa Leela is over. Then in the 35th chapter, as Krishna wanders through the forests, then the gopis sing another song which is called the Yugala Geet, the fourth of the Gita Panchaka. The verses in this 35th chapter are in pairs. So therefore they are called Yugala Geet. Yugal means a pair, two. So there are dozen verses in pairs. Here also the gopis sing very beautifully about Krishna. So that is the fourth of the Gita Panchakam. And the 47th chapter, which we are studying these days, the Song of the Bee, the Bhramara Geeta, is the fifth of the Gita Panchakam. So these are the five most beautiful songs, the crest jewels of the wonderful song in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have the great fortune of being exposed to such literature, even if we may not be able to fully understand or comprehend or relate to what is being spoken about here. Doesn't matter. We need not get into the technicalities of what Sanjalpa is and what the different kinds of Chitrajalpas is and so on and so forth. That is subject which is perhaps one day comprehensible to us. But for now, with this background, we can just appreciate that here is Krishna relating to his topmost devotee Srimati Radharani in a way that is unparalleled and not possible for anybody else in the world. So we have the bee, who Srimati Radharani thinks is a messenger of Krishna. In this stage, people may imagine things of this sort. Sometimes somebody imagines the cloud has come as a messenger of Krishna and giving a message from Krishna, and so on and so forth. At this stage, we are more concerned with driving away the clouds of anarthas from our hearts. But as the Bhagavatam says, if we simply faithfully hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam every day, regularly, then gradually when these clouds of anarthas, of materialism go away from the heart, then these very deep subjects will one day manifest in our heart. And we will also be able to relish the Srimad Bhagavatam like the great Rasika Bhaktas do. That is the only aspiration in our life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah, the subject is such. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.